Let's open with a word of prayer this morning. Father, what a joy it is to bow down. We give you praise. We give you glory, Lord, and thank you for your word, Lord, and help us to give you our whole heart this morning, Lord, and just to set aside all of those physical things that tend to attract us so much and get so much of our attention. And one of the biggest ones is ourselves, Lord. We have so much attention to ourselves, and that is the way it should be. And so help us to look to you and look to your word and to receive from it this morning. In Jesus' name, amen. We continue to see God's plan unfolding perfectly. His purposes will always be accomplished. Remember that. Whether you like it or not, or whether the world likes it or not, his purposes are going to be done. And we can either get on board with the program of sanctification, those who are saved, or we can fight it. He's still going to sanctify you, but the road is a lot rougher if you're fighting it, and you're not going to do nearly as much that he wants you to do if you're resisting. Today we have a dream subject. We have two dreams in chapter 40, and one dream by each of two people, the baker and the butler, and their interpretation. And then in chapter 41, we have Pharaoh having a two-part dream, or two dreams, if you want to call it that. They're both the same dream. And these dreams are so instrumental. You remember back when Joseph was still at home, how he had two dreams. So we've got two all through here. It just seems like two dreams. But each one of these dreams are so important. You know, in a dream, in a way, it was a dream when God was meeting with Abraham way back in chapter 15. He said that you will go into a foreign land, which of course we know is Egypt, and be there 400 years until the Amorite iniquity has been, time has passed. And so God is going to have to get Jacob's family into Egypt. So how does he do that? Well, he starts off with a dream for Jacob as a teenager who tells his brothers, and they get so mad, they want to kill him, but they want to make some money off of him at the same time, so they send him into slavery, and he goes to Egypt. So now the first member of Jacob's family is in Egypt. Now we pick it up. We'll be 13 years later here before we're done in the study tonight. So for 13 years, we're going to see Jacob in preparation for what's ahead. And we mentioned before, when God calls, he will always prepare you for that call. And when you say, I don't have any experience, I think he wouldn't say this, but I would think he would say, wonderful. Your experience is just going to get in your way, because I'm going to prepare you for what you need. I'm going to give you what you need. And you can slow all that down by saying, Lord, I already know that. I already know how to do that. Then you're going to make a mess of it, because it's not going to work if it's from you spiritually. So we see now the dreams in chapter 40 will cause Joseph a couple of things. One, they will be very encouraging, because he will see for sure that God's gift to him for interpretation of dreams is still active. Even though he's been in slavery, even though he's been in prison for a number of years. And it's also going to cause him to stay in prison. Oh, I don't like that, he would say, if he knew it. But God needs him there at the time when he's going to give Pharaoh the two dreams of famine and plenty, because Joseph is being raised up really to, in effect, control the food supply for the world. For a few years. That's a huge, 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 huge task. And so we see all the preparation for that task here. And so that's like you, and it's like me in a way. God is preparing us for things only he knows. And we look at it and we have these pressures and these difficulties. I'm talking about from him, not ones that we cause by our own poor decisions. But he is shaping us and forming us. And we would say, I don't like that, Lord. Why are you doing that to me? And that's an obvious question that our flesh would have. But the other question we ought to be asking is this of you? And what are you showing me? What are you preparing me for? And if I'm already prepared, you wouldn't continue to do this. And so you have more things for me than I can visualize. Because I like to think, I'm ready, Lord, I'm ready. Just use me, I'm ready. And he's saying, well, yeah, but I could use you a lot better if I get you a little bit more where I want you to be, right? So we will see this continuing. On one hand, God is working and performing his purposes. On the other hand, Joseph is amazingly showing his integrity all the way through. We don't see any complaining about him at all. Amazing. And it gives me real hope. We get some little bump in the road and we complain and tell everybody how tough it is, right? How many years have you been in prison? How many years have you been a slave? Now you could say, well, I've been a slave to sin until I came to him in a way, but not the same as being sold on an auction block in Egypt, I don't think. And so we have here, then we have this. Last week, we had that great lesson on yielding not to temptation, remember, and how he was perfect in every way in that. And what happened? He gets falsely accused and gets thrown in jail. I wouldn't be very happy about that. But Lord, I was doing the right thing. So the Lord's plan is perfect. We do not always see it. We want it in terms of our perspective. I do something good. Oh, Lord, you got to reward me now. I've done something good. No, that's not what he's doing necessarily. He's rewarding us all right, but something much greater than we could ever envision. So we had last week, we ended in chapter 39, verse 22, 23, and the keeper of the prison, so now he's in prison, that last week, more testing, and the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. So we see already he goes from the house to the prison, and he goes right to the top again, like the cream rising to the top. He's quite a man. You know, before he left home at 17, he was the superintendent over these old guys who were his half-brothers, older anyway. And so he's an amazingly gifted man. God is working through him. And it says, committed to Joseph's, all the prisoners who were in the prison, whatever they did, it was his doing under his control, authority. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority. Such trust there, just as Potiphar had so trusted him. Same thing here. And why? Because the Lord was with him. Is the Lord with you? Well, I don't know whether you know it or not, but he is. Sometimes we wonder. But the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. Now, I just wanted to go side note just a little bit to Psalm 105, because we have a little bit of information in Psalm 105 that isn't in Genesis about this account. Verse 16 reads, Moreover, God called for a famine in the land. He destroyed all the provisions of bread. He sent a man before them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. Now here we have this, which is not in the book of Genesis. They hurt his feet with fetters. He was laid in irons. So he didn't have a really rosy way, at least when he first went in, apparently, until the time that his word came to pass. The word of the Lord tested him. We see that here in Psalm 105, and we know that. The king sent and released him. The ruler of the people let him go free. He made him lord of his house and ruler of all his possessions, to bind his princes at his pleasure and teach his elders wisdom. Just think about that last phrase there. Here's a young, at the point when he gets out here, he's 30 years old, but he's in his 20s, and he's Hebrew. He's not Egyptian. He's a foreigner. He's a young foreign slave, and he's teaching all of the wise people in Egypt. Elders, it could be called senators there, to teach the senators wisdom is in, I think, the Old King James. So now we move on into chapter 40, and we have the prisoner's dreams. Verse 1, it came to pass after these things that the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief butler and the chief baker. So he put them in the custody of the house of the captain of the guard. Now we know the captain of the guard was the title that Potiphar had, who bought him out of slavery. So we think that this is really the prison under Potiphar's authority. But he put him in the custody of the house, and in last week we had it called the king's prison. here it says in the prison, the place where Joseph was confined. So the point here is the butler and the baker go into that prison, and now they're going to be under Joseph's jurisdiction. And the captain of the guard charged, or here it is, gave Joseph with them, and he, Joseph, served them, so they were in custody for a while. So some time goes on. Now, when they went in, we aren't told. When Joseph went in, we aren't told. But we think it's probably a total prison time of 6, 7, maybe 8 years, somewhere around there. We know it's 13 years from, if you subtract 17 from 30, you get 13. So he came into the Egypt at 17. He's now raised up. When he stands in front of Pharaoh before today's study is over, he'll be 30 years old. So that's 13 years of preparation. And part of it was in Potiphar's house and part of it in prison. And we don't have any dates that I know of that we know exactly when those dates were. And it's not important. He was in preparation for 13 years. Wherever he was, God was preparing him. But we see here different backgrounds. He was administrating over all of Pharaoh's estate. And now he's administrator over all the prison. So you can see his experience in being over people and over governmental aspects here is being given to him. And he's really going to need that when he gets to be elevated in the position God is going to have him elevated to. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them, and they were in custody for a while. So I mentioned in passing, but I'll mention it again, just consider how he was so faithful to God, and he maintained his integrity under all conditions. You know, he goes into Potiphar's house, he does everything really, really well, but still he gets falsely accused and gets thrown into prison. Now, he's been in prison for some years now at this point, at least a few years. And how would you have felt? Would you have been sincere in trying to help others? He maintained his integrity and his faith in God in spite of all. And this is such a great story as we're going about every week. And here's a 17-year-old kid who came really from a dysfunctional family with his brothers hating him and wanting to kill him and throwing him into slavery. And you would think he doesn't have a chance. He's going to get sold into that pagan pit of Egypt. My, oh my, there'll go his faith in Christ. It's over for him. We've lost him. Save it, the same thing with Daniel when he went to Babylon. They would think, people would think, I believe, he won't be around his parents. He won't be around any supervision from back home. And he's got to be in the occult for 3 years, learning all the occultic practices. I mean, there's not a chance he's going to keep his faith, right? No, it doesn't come from the outside so much as from the lack of coming from the inside. Now, you and I know as believers, nothing can separate us from God. I don't care what's happening outside, our relationship with God can't be changed. And we think, oh, I hope we don't have an atomic bomb. Well, in one way, what difference does that make? Doesn't make any difference to us with our relationship with God, does it? I don't think so. Gets us out of here quicker. But I'm not promoting for a nuclear explosion. But the point is, we have that great, great thing that he's done for us that nothing can take us away from that, from the outside. And so we see that here. But I marked down a question for myself. How frequently do I challenge the goodness of God? Do I do well in maintaining my integrity and my faith in God in spite of obstacles that come along in my life? And I find when times are calm, I think I've got really strong faith. But then God tests it, and I find out sometimes I don't even think I have any faith. I mean, it's like down to the last hair breath, right? Because I'm about ready to throw in the towel because this is so bad, and it can't get any worse, and it gets worse. And Lord, where are you? I've been praying for this. And the more you pray, in a way, at times, it seems the worse it gets. And then you say, well, I'm not going to pray anymore. It's only getting worse while I pray. Well, that's what Satan wants you to do. And he wants you to give up on God. What? Think of Job. The whole test there was, is grace sufficient for Job to go through all of this thing, which is a horrible thing, for a longer period of time where he wasted down to skin and bones with boils and everything else, and having lost all his family and all his property and lost everything, and yet he never blasphemed the name of God. He questioned it a little bit, but he never He never turned. His grace was sufficient there. Such a great test, such a great book in the Bible in that regard. And of course, I love chapter 38, because then, you know, there are times when Job gets kind of irritated and he says, man, you know, in effect, my words, when I get in front of God, man, I'm going to ask him a question or two. You know, he never asked one question. God asked him like 70 some questions and he couldn't answer one. And it was so moving to him, he didn't even open his mouth. He was just standing in awe. But how frequently do I challenge the goodness of God, and do I do well maintaining my integrity and faith in God, regardless of what's happening on the outside? So I think it's a good question for me. It might be a good question for you. Verse 5, then the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt who were confined in the prison had a dream, both of them, each man's dream in one night, and each man's dream with its own interpretation. Two men, two dreams, same night. Now we see an indication of Joseph's compassion for prisoners. I'm amazed, because I don't believe most prison supervisors have a great deal of compassion for the prisoners. But Joseph came into them in the morning and looked at them and saw that they were sad, very observant. He's merciful, he's discerning, he's charged over them, he's watching them carefully. Verse 7, so he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in the custody of his Lord's house, saying, these two, why do you look so sad today? I imagine prisoners look sad every day. But he's discerning. He's seeing they look really sad, I guess. Why do you look so sad today? And they said to him, we've each had a dream, and there's no interpreter of it. So Joseph said, listen to this, do not interpretations belong to God? Is that what you would have said to them? Well, you know, I've had some practice in interpretation. Let me tell you, when I was a teenager, I had this dream and I had that. And no. Let me tell you all about myself. No, that's not in Joseph's character at this point. He says, don't all interpretations belong to God? But then he says something very startling in a way. He says, tell them to me, please. What does that mean? It means he's still got that solid belief in the Lord watching over him and giving him this spiritual interpretation, which knows he still has. Otherwise, he wouldn't be offering, tell them to me. He's not saying, well, I had some good things in the past. Why don't we try it out and see if it works for you? He doesn't say that. He says, tell me, please. Then the chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said to him, behold, in my dream, a vine was before me. And in the vine were three branches. It was though it budded, its blossoms shot forth, and its clusters brought forth ripe grapes. Then Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. That's the dream. Verse 12. And Joseph said to him, this is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Now, within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head. That really means elevate you in your position. Doesn't mean take his head off. Will lift you up and restore you to your place. And you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand, as you did before, as his butler. Pharaoh's cup in his hand, according to the former manner when you were his butler. There we have it. But I got a favor to ask you, Mr. Chief Butler. He said, but remember me when it is well with you. Here's the interpretation. It's going to happen. So when it does happen, remember me. And please show kindness to me. Make mention of me to Pharaoh and get me out of this place. There's a repetition of me 4 times there. Joseph does not like to be in prison. As godly as he is, he wants out. And I can't imagine any of us wanting to be in prison. Although we may be there, and Paul would say, whether I'm in here or not in here, actually I'm not even in prison by the government. I'm in prison because of Christ. And in prison or out of prison isn't going to make any difference. I'm going to proclaim the gospel and so forth. But here he says, remember me, show kindness to me, make mention of me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this house. Now, remember, he was sentenced there by Potiphar, not by Pharaoh. But of course, you know, this is like going all the way to the top, Pharaoh. And we're talking now to the man who's at Pharaoh's elbow most of the time, the chief butler. He would be tasting the things that he ate. He would be watching over all of the things that are going on. And so he would be in Pharaoh's presence almost constantly. So when you can get somebody who's constantly at the elbow of the number one guy in effect in the world, that's a good position. That would be a good, important thing, wouldn't it? Man, we can count on that. I know this is going to happen. And he goes ahead and tells this butler, "For indeed, I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews. And also, I've done nothing here that they should put me in the dungeon." So he's saying, I'm innocent. I was kidnapped. No mention of his brothers here. I would have probably said, you know, I've got 11 of the worst brothers in the world, and they sold me into slavery. No, he doesn't say this. He just says, I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews, and also I've done nothing here that he should put me into dungeon. So that already gives me a spiritual check. What would I have said in that case? Probably not what he said. I'd said something much worse. But we see the tenderness in his heart here. He doesn't want to be in prison. He says, you know, remember me. Remember me. So, question I had for myself, if while I'm being completely faithful to God, I get falsely accused and sent to prison for a number of years, how likely would I be willing to be faithful to God in that prison? How likely would I be willing to be helping and reaching out to others in a Christ-like manner? I can't answer that question because I haven't been there. I could say that would be my prayer that I could do that, but whether I could do that or not, I don't know. Haven't done it. When the chief baker saw the interpretation was good, now, hey, this is, man, that's a good interpretation. I bet he just gives good interpretations no matter what. Man, I can hardly wait for him to give me my interpretation, he may have said. So he said, I also was in my dream, and there were three white baskets on my head. In the uppermost basket were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh, and the birds ate them out of the basket on my head. Now, this is a dream, but actually that was a frequent occurrence in those days. They would carry things on their head, usually in baskets or whatever, and good things. The birds would come along and swoop down and constantly robbing them, constantly taking them out or eating them. But this is his dream. This doesn't mean this is actually happening. This is his dream. The birds ate them out of the basket on my head. Well, it's never good to have birds in a dream if you think of them as anything but dirty birds, really, in a way. And the birds ate them out of the basket on my head. So Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation of it. The three baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh from you. Would you have given that kind of an interpretation? I think there's a really important point there. When we're called on to give the word of God, we're to give it whether it brings good news or bad news. And also, when he calls us to minister to somebody, you don't say, well, I'm not going to minister to that guy or that gal. I mean, they're dirty and they're smelly and I don't even want to be around them. I want to go to the one next door who's really good looking and intelligent and well-mannered. I want to witness to them. I want them to know the good news, but not that one. No, you're to give the news whether it's good or bad, right? And you have a responsibility to do what is right in his sight, regardless of the outcome. So Joseph here is telling, you might call it a bad interpretation. It's actually a good interpretation of a bad dream. The interpretation is perfect, but the news is bad. Because he's going to, in 3 days, he's going to have his head taken off. Verse 20, now it came to pass on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday. So on Pharaoh's birthday, they would have a big feast. And he would announce freedom from prisoners and that kind of a stuff, or do different things on that occasion. But there was a big gathering because he'd get everybody together. And we read here, now it came to pass on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all his servants. So this is a biggie. And he lifted up the head of the chief butler meaning he raised him up and the chief baker among his servants. So here they have like front table now, or at least they're brought in, I don't know which. Then he restored the chief butler to his butlership again, but he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot. Why do you think he forgot him? Well, I see divine intervention there myself. That doesn't mean necessarily that we couldn't forget something like that. But the timing isn't right yet. If he had gone ahead and told Pharaoh, and the Pharaoh didn't know about Pharaoh's dreams coming up yet, and that God had an integral plan in the world as a result of that, and what Joseph was going to be in that, he didn't know all that. And Pharaoh would have granted him release, where would he be? I'm sure he'd gone right back home to Israel, back to dad, back to the brothers, wouldn't he? He wouldn't have stayed in this pagan place of Egypt. So time's not yet. So this guy forgets him. Now, I can just imagine this is such a breath of fresh air for Joseph when he hears back that the dream was carried out exactly as interpreted, because now, either today or tomorrow, I'll be out of here. Because I know, you know, he knows me. He knows I was sincere. And I'm sure he doesn't say this, but I'm sure that the baker probably said, you can count on me. You know, I'll be sure and tell the Pharaoh. But he's still there at the end of the first day. He's still there at the end of the second day. Well, certainly on the third day, I know it'll be by now. No, third day comes and goes. A week goes. 2 weeks goes. A month goes. 12 months goes. 24 months will go by. And when you really think, oh, here's the life raft. Oh, I'm just about to be pulled out of the rapids here. And then you have to stay in that rapids another 2 years. That's tough, isn't it? But God is working in that situation. Joseph doesn't see the full story, just as you and I don't see the full story when God is working in our hearts, do we? We know the end, we're going to be with him in heaven, right? We have the living hope. But so often we take our eyes off of that. If I have cancer, for example, got a CAT scan coming up in 10 days, I'm far more focused on that CAT scan than I'm on my eternal destination. That's just the way our bodies are, right? Oh, I'm so worried about this result. And then when the result comes in, you'll probably do one of two things. If it's good, you say, well, I hope it stays good and doesn't get bad. If it's bad, you said, I knew it would be bad. You know, and here we are. We're not even, in some cases, even thankful for the good news. Even if it doesn't say to be good news, it's always good to get good news in a way. But here we see Joseph doesn't see the end of this story. He doesn't have the Bible. He hasn't read Genesis. We've read Genesis, so we see, and we see, as we'll have next week, this great reunion with his brothers, just the beauty of all of this. But he doesn't see any of that. All he knows is he's hoping to get out of prison any day now, and it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. Now, we know that his father will a little later on say, based on what he saw when he had to let Benjamin go down to Egypt, all these things are against me. And how many times have you said that? It seems like all the things are against me at times. But like with Jacob's case, in just a few days after he said that, he'll be hugging his son Joseph, whom he thought was dead. He'll be with him to spend the 17 years or whatever it was, the rest of his life there with him in Egypt. So know that our problem is always going to be one where we don't know what's ahead, because God didn't give us that ability, because he wants us to have faith and trust in him, right? He wants that relationship. If I know the end from the beginning, and I know the end comes up well, do you think I'm going to be on my knees? Not very much. Oh, yeah, I'll probably praise him now and then and say, yeah, thank you. I know where I'm going. I mean, that's where we are right now, aren't we? Don't we know where we're going? And how often do we praise him for that? Really, thank him for that. And how valuable is that to us? I mean, there's nothing like that. There's nothing like that. In all the universe, there's nothing like salvation forever with him. He has blessed us so much. And so if he never gives us one more blessing, we are blessed so far beyond even our ability to understand. But the thought that I put down here in my question for me, during times of great testing and difficulty, how much confidence do I put in man, in their promises? And am I depending on man the most? Am I depending on man and God equally? Or do I depend primarily on God? Now, again, I can't answer those questions really because it depends on the circumstance so much, and I can't possibly say what I have done would have done in Joseph's situation because I haven't even come close to being tested like this. But if you're depending mostly on those around you, in other words, if you've got a battle buddy that you are really close and you know, in a way you can't live without him, that's good in a way, but he's going to let you down. Oh, man will always let you down, and you'll let yourself down. But God never will. We need to remember that, right? So now we move on to the next dream chapter, chapter 41 of Pharaoh's dreams. Now it came to pass at the end of 2 full years. So 2 full years go by where Joseph has hoped that he would get out, and he's not. That Pharaoh had a dream, and behold, he stood by the river, probably the Nile River. Suddenly there came up out of the river 7 cows, fine-looking and fat, and they fed in the meadows. Then behold, 7 other cows came out after them out of the river, ugly and skinny, or ugly and gaunt, and stood by the other cows on the bank of the river, and the ugly and gaunt cows ate up the 7 fine-looking fat cows. I don't know, it'd be quite a dream if I see a carnivorous cow eating another cow, right? I don't know if they had fangs all of a sudden or what, but anyway, they're eating them in the dream. Perfect example of the dream of what's happening. So Pharaoh awoke. This is unusual. You know, isn't it amazing sometimes how you awake from a bad dream? I mean, you're all kind of like just sweaty, and you're all just, you can't even get your bearing for a little bit. It's just like you're something else. And you, are they catching me yet? Are they coming after me? And you know, you wake up and there you are on the bed. And of course, praise God, there's nobody coming after you. But here he woke. He woke. Verse 5, he slept and dreamed a second time. Suddenly, 7 heads of grain came up on 1 stalk, plump and good. Then behold, 7 thin heads, blighted by the east wind, sprang up after them. And the 7 thin heads devoured the same thing, devoured the 7 plump and full heads. So Pharaoh awoke once again. And indeed, it was a dream. So these two dreams end up like a nightmare, and he wakes up from them both. He was really shaken, I would think, because in the morning, it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled. So even though nights pass and it's morning, he's still got the troubled spirit. He's got that dream in his mind and heart, apparently. And he sends and calls for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. Now, he would have had a lot in that group. And you remember, as we'll get later with Moses and all, with the 10 plagues and all, these guys are pretty, they're demonic. They're all into the demonic realm, but Satan has a lot of power compared to us. No power compared to him. He who's in us is greater than he who's in the world. But they had this, Moses threw his staff down, became a serpent, and they threw theirs down and became a serpent. Of course, Moses the serpent ate their serpents, but nevertheless, they could make a serpent, apparently. And then the next one, they could do the same thing, and that was turn blood into water. But then after that, they were out of the capacity of being able to do it. They couldn't create life. And we'll see a demarcation here. I think it's very clear. These magicians are into the occult. They're into the magic of Satan. When you have something from God, it doesn't even register on their screen. So we've got dreams from God here now to Pharaoh, not dreams from Satan. So that's why Nebuchadnezzar's dream was especially important there, because in Nebuchadnezzar, he didn't even give him the dream, right? When Daniel's time, he said, you tell me the dream, because I'm tired of interpretations. You tell me the dream. And they couldn't do it, because they couldn't. They're in the occult. They couldn't have known what God said. But Daniel was given that. And here we have the same thing with Joseph. So he called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men, and Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them for Pharaoh. Then the chief butler, hello there. I was supposed to tell him about Joseph. Then the chief butler spoke to Pharaoh, saying, I remember my faults this day. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, both me and the chief baker, that we each had a dream. And one night, he and I, each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his old dream. Now there was a young Hebrew man there, a servant of the captain of the guard. And we told him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each man he interpreted according to his own dream. And it came to pass just as he interpreted for us. So it happened. He restored me to my office, and he hanged the baker. Wow. Time is now. Here is the dream that's going to result in the position that God is going to elevate Joseph to. 2 years later. But think how important those 2 years were. If Joseph would have somehow gotten out and left, he wouldn't have been there. And they might not even be able to find him. Of course, with God, that would never happen. But he's going to stay right there in the prison. So when he's needed, just, hey, go get him. He's right around the corner, wherever the prison was there. And just think how that day would have started for Joseph. It's like, another day in prison. You know, I surely had hoped I'd gotten out, but, you know, it's been 2 years now, and I guess I'm going to be here for the rest of my life. And pretty soon something happens. I don't know if it's a knock on the door, a clang of the chains, or whatever else. Well, he wasn't in chains, but in the prison. And say, hey, Pharaoh wants to see you. Get out of there. So he comes out, shave him, bathe him, put clean clothes on him, and they take him to Pharaoh. Man, what kind of a day is going on here? What kind of a day is going on here is amazing, isn't it? But we're seeing the plan of God unfolding. And bit by bit, we get to see a little bit more clearly God's plan and how he's putting these things, pieces into shape. So verse 14, then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him quickly out of the dungeon, and he changed his clothes and bathed. Now, it was an abomination to not be shaved in the presence of Pharaoh, but the prisoners wouldn't be shaving, pretty sure of that. So he had to be shaved. So verse 15, and Pharaoh said to Joseph, I've had a dream, and there's no one who can interpret it, but I have heard it said of you that you can understand a dream to interpret it. Now, what would have been your reaction? Vision this now. Here's the number one man in the world. You've been in prison for 6 or 7 years. He calls you out. You get cleaned up. You get shaved. And you probably said, well, I know that would happen, because to come in his presence, it got to be. But what's going on here? And then he says, I've heard about you, that you can interpret dreams. So what would you have said? Well, you know, yeah, I kind of have a gift like that, you know, and it's he would just say, oh, wow, tell me more, Pharaoh. Maybe you wouldn't have, maybe I would have. But what does Joseph answer? It's not in me. Now, here's a slave talking to the number one person in the world. And the number one person in the world is congratulating him on what he's heard about him and his capability. And he says, not in me. Would you do that? Would you really mean that when you said it's not in me? Just think of the last time the Lord really worked in an amazing way in your life and you start telling people about it. How much of you gets into that story that shouldn't be in there? You always look better than you were, aren't you? The crowd is always bigger than it was. What God did is always bigger in your painting the story to make it sound better, right? I really want to impress people with how I was used in that situation. Doesn't that bother us? Doesn't that come into it? Isn't that kind of a test we have? But Joseph says, it's not in me. It's the same thing that Daniel said when Nebuchadnezzar said, I know you can interpret dreams. And he said, no, I don't interpret dreams. The God of heaven interprets dreams. Give God the glory. That's the whole point here in this particular sentence to me. It's not in me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. So question, how often do I take credit for what God is doing or has done in my life? Maybe just a little bit, but I still do it. We're not to do that. Pastor Chuck used to always mention Isaiah 42:8 in pastors' conferences often. Remember this, God speaking, I am the Lord, that is my name, and my glory I will not give to another, nor my praise to carved images. If you take the glory, your ministry is over. If you persist in taking the glory, you're not going to have any ministry. And whatever glory you take is going to, it's like sin, it's going to push you away from the Lord because you're not giving him all the glory. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, behold, in my dream, he's telling me his dreams now. We've already heard him. He'll tell him, add a couple of things here. Behold, in my dream, I stood on the bank of the river. Suddenly, seven cows came up out of the river, fine looking and fat, and they fed in the meadows. Then behold, seven other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and gaunt. Such ugliness I've never seen in all the land of Egypt. He didn't say that in his first dream. But you wouldn't see that in Egypt because they had the flood coming every year and it was a lush place and you wouldn't have skinny cattle. They wouldn't allow that. They didn't like cows anyway, but they liked the meat and so forth, so they would take good care of them, I'm sure. Something I've never seen in all the land of Egypt. And the gaunt and ugly cows ate up the first seven, the fat cows. And when they'd eaten them up, you wouldn't have known it. They still were skinny, ugly, and gaunt, just as at the beginning. So here's this great little tiny skinny cow eating this great big fat cow, and after it's eaten, it's still as small as it was. In other words, the famine's coming, and there's not going to be any surplus, a bit of it. It's all gone. And secondly, I saw in my dreams, and suddenly seven heads came up on one stalk, full and good. Then behold, seven heads withered thin, blighted by the east wind, sprang up after them. And the thin heads devoured the seven good heads. So I told this to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain that to me. So that's not part of the dream, but that's what happened after the dream. And he's telling that to Joseph. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, here's the interpretation. The dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. That's almost exactly what Daniel would tell Nebuchadnezzar later about Nebuchadnezzar's dream. God has shown you, king, what he's about to do. And here is him telling Pharaoh, God has shown you what he is about to do. Well, I bet Pharaoh is listening intently. The seven good cows are 7 years. And the seven good heads are 7 years. The dreams are one. And the seven thin and ugly cows which came up after them are 7 years. And the seven empty heads blighted by the east wind are 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. Now, I think that's really important for us as believers as well. I think that we are to know the time and the seasons, aren't we? Of what's coming. I think God is showing that to us, showing it to it in his word and confirming us as we see things happening in the world. But here, back to the dream. God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. Indeed, 7 years of great plenty will come throughout all the land of Egypt. But after them, 7 years of famine will arise, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will deplete the land. So the plenty will not be known in the land because of the famine following, for it will be very severe. Now think about that. Think about the United States in that context. In my lifetime, and in your lifetime, or at least in the 70 plus years since World War II, this nation has been so abundantly blessed. But we've gone from no debt to $34 trillion in debt. Think of that. It's so reverse of this whole plan here. This whole plan here is to save up while things are good and be in a position to carry through with those good things to get through the bad so you don't expire, right? And think how we've turned that upside down. We have almost no savings in this country by the people, let alone the government. Everybody pretty much is living paycheck to paycheck, buying when they can't afford it. The credit card debt has never been so high. And what is credit card debt but just the opposite of this? You don't have the money, but you spend it anyway. But this is so important. This godly plan, a godly principle of planning ahead. And the number one area of planning ahead is eternity, right? Where are you going to spend eternity? Created in God's image, we're all eternal. We're all going to spend eternity someplace. Where is it going to be? Well, for you who are saved, you've got that covered. Not you, but he's got it covered. Those who are not saved yet, they don't have that covered. They're living and their time's about out. So what a motivation for us to pray for the lost. So we read here, the dream was repeated to Pharaoh twice because the thing is established by God and God will surely bring it to pass. So I presume that means one time, there's two things going to happen here. One, the thing is established by God. And secondly, it's going to happen soon. Man, that sounds like the rapture to me, doesn't it? In a way, I mean, not necessarily. This is the dream we're talking about here. But some of this certainly seems like where we are right now in the age of the church. So now, in addition to the interpretation, now God speaks through Joseph, this great wisdom to Pharaoh. And think of it. 30-year-old kid, basically, not really a kid, but 30 years old. Well, to me, a 30-year-old is a kid. Young man speaking to this number one guy in the world and telling him, here's what you do. Is this amazing or not? This is God. This is God. Let Pharaoh do this and let him appoint officers. How even that, he's giving him a directive, but it's even that's couched the right way. It's not, you do this, Lester. No, it's let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man. Let Pharaoh do this and let him appoint officers over the land to collect 1/5 or 20% of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 plentiful years. Now, their taxes at that point were half of that. They were 10%. But Joseph, in wisdom from God, is telling him, make it 20%. 10% wouldn't be enough to see you through. Because you got to really save here. Because you've got to reproduce 7 years from the plenty. And there's going to be other countries that are going to come to you as well. You got to have more than that. So if you're going to have 20% for 7 years, that's 140%. Sounds like a good number to me. It's not extravagant, but it covers it. I mean, it's a God number. Got to be good. Let them gather all the food of those good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh and let them keep food in the cities. Then that food shall be as a reserve for the land of the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the hand of Egypt, that the land may not perish during the famine. So the principle of planning for the future is so godly. And as I wrote down here, how easily we can note the absence of this principle in our country and in the lives of the people in this country, really in the whole world. I mean, the whole world is desperate, right? Nothing saved up. So a question to myself, how clearly is this principle of planning for the future being shown in my life? Spiritually or eternally, primarily, as well as physically. And got it pretty well, maybe you might think. Well, how about those loved ones around me? How about those loved ones around me? So this is just a beautiful example to focus on the importance of being ready. Of course, that's what the Bible says over and over. We know he's coming. We don't know when, but we're to what? Watch, work, and be ready. Watch, work, and be ready, aren't we? So are we doing that? Now we're going to have the exaltation of Joseph being rising to power in the position that God has prepared for him. Verse 37, so the advice was good, absolutely. The advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. Now again, think of the cultural boundaries that are being crossed here. Here you got Egypt, who will be eventually, maybe not at this date yet, but they will be looking to the Jews as slaves, right? It's not that they're embracing them, trying to build them up because they're afraid of them, right? But here we have them looking at a 30-year-old foreigner and all in agreement. Isn't that great? I mean, again, that's a God thing, because that's not going to happen in the natural. So the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find such a one as this, a man in whom is the Spirit of God? It's really kind of a similar statement that Nebuchadnezzar made when Daniel interpreted his dream. And since they serve so many gods, I don't know that this is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but it's a pagan king here recognizing he's calling it the Spirit of God. So he sees something here. I mean, this is not normal for a 30-year-old guy to be able to tell him not only the dream, but giving him the answer to what to do with that dream. This is amazing, he's saying. And I think Joseph is so pure. I don't think he is at all trying to create a position for himself, because this is God doing it. It's not Joseph. He doesn't want that job. Would you want that job? Would you like to be number two in the world in charge of all the food supply for the world? What headaches. My, oh, my. But my question is, Spirit of God, how much evidence is there in my life that the Spirit of God is in me? That it can be said, there is a person, there is a man, or in your case, a woman, there is a man in whom is the Spirit of God. Good question for us. And you know, I hope I keep mentioning this. I phrase these in terms of my life, because I can't really look into your life. But I would assume any question that I'm asking myself is a certain degree of fit for all of us. How much evidence is there in your life that the Spirit of God is in you? So verse 39, then Pharaoh said to Joseph, inasmuch as God has shown you all this. Now, think of that witness there. Joseph has handled it the right way. He hasn't taken any of the glory. Pharaoh doesn't say, since you have given us all your wisdom, he says, no, it's of God, inasmuch as God has shown you all this. I love that. That is so good. Do people around you, would they leave you and come to the conclusion that your strong faith and whatever you're doing for the Lord is all given by God? Or are they saying, oh, man, look at that person. Isn't he something? Be careful with that. Inasmuch as God has shown you all this, there is no one as discerning and wise as you. Now, Pharaoh shows some wisdom here as well, doesn't he, in saying that? You shall be over my house. And according to your word, and only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. Wow. From prison to palace, right? From rags to riches, so to speak. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring off his hand and put it on Joseph's hand. Now that is the authority of Egypt, giving it to Joseph. He's not even Egyptian. He's only 30 years old. Put it on Joseph's hand, and he clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck, which was a sign, really, of, in effect, of, this is my son, really. That's how close that position is. Man, that's authority. Whenever you get that signet ring whole world recognized that. Nobody could argue with whatever Joseph will say or decides. And verse 43, he had him ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried out before him, bow the knee, basically regarding him as the son of Pharaoh in authority and so forth. And so the people would bow the knee to both chariots. Joseph is getting the same bowing treatment here. Now, do you remember anything in the past where Joseph had a dream that they were going to bow down to him? Especially his brothers, which will come next week, not yet. But this is all part of the bowing down. And of course, we see all these similitudes all the way through here with Joseph and Jesus Christ. You know, one day all the knees will bow to Jesus and so forth, one after the other. And you can count them up. You can get a whole bunch of them. A.W. Pink. Pink is, if you ever look at his commentaries, be prepared to look a while. They usually are about what a typical would be, 10 pages. Most people, he'll have 80 pages. And he goes on and on and on and on and on and on. He lists, I think, over 60 similitudes here between, and some of them are kind of, I don't know, it's kind of stretching it a bit. Vernon McGee has, I think, 28. And you can spend time in drawing the parallels between Christ and Joseph. Of course, Christ is on every page of the Bible. You can do that wherever you are, can't you, in the Bible. But bow the knee. So Pharaoh said, Joseph over all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh also said to Joseph, verse 44, I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, Joseph, no man may lift his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. That's power, isn't it? Wow. And now Pharaoh is going to change his name to an Egyptian name, or giving him an Egyptian name, and Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paaneah, and most believe that means revealer of secrets. And he gave him as a wife Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. On was a city of sun worship, so this is a pagan priest. So his daughter. So Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. Now on the seventh, now in the seventh plentiful year, the ground brought forth food abundantly. So he gathered up all the food of the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt and laid up the food in the cities. He laid up in every city the food of the fields which surrounded them. Joseph gathered very much grain as the sand of the sea until he stopped counting, for it was unmeasurable. And Joseph, to him were born two sons before the years of the famine came, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore to him. The first, as you know, born was Manasseh. And for God had made me forget. For that name, Manasseh, means forgetful. So he looks at that son and he forgets he's been in prison. He forgets those 13 years of difficulties, naming him forgetful, forgetting. We read that kind of in Revelation 21:4, don't we? And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, no sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. So we see that kind of being acted out here in Joseph's life. And the name of the second he called Ephraim, which means fruitful or doubly fruitful, because now God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. Can you imagine being in prison for 13 years, thinking you're going to rot there in the rest of your life, and one day, next day, you're number two in the world, with being given the assignment of distributing all this food, collecting it, and so forth, so the world doesn't starve to death. Big, big, big position. Verse 53, then the 7 years of plenty which were in the land of Egypt ended. 7 years is over, and the 7 years of famine began to come. As Joseph had said, the famine was in all lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. So when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. Then Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, go to Joseph. Whatever he says to you, do. The famine was over all the face of the earth, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and what? Gave it away? No, he sold it. You think, wow, really? What's going to be the result of that? Well, it's going to be the result of that. Egypt is going to end up with all the money in the world in 7 years. But that's not really one of the points I wanted to make, the main point. If you would give that away, that would be gone tomorrow. But if you sell it, that's going to last a long time. Because if we're paying dearly for something, we're not going to waste it, particularly food. We're not going to eat all. If this is all the food I'm going to get and I got to pay a lot of money for it, that's going to last me a long time. If it were free, I'd gobble it all up in one day, right? So wisdom here. Sold it to the Egyptians, and the famine became severe in the land of Egypt. So all countries came to Joseph in Egypt to buy grain because the famine was severe in all the world. So don't close the book yet. We're not quite done yet. We're going to have a glorious chapter next week in the reunification of Joseph and his brothers, one of the most touching chapters in the Bible. But here we see the culmination of God's planning. And for 13 years, Joseph would have thought, you know, all hope is lost. How could this happen to me? I have not been disobedient in any way, and yet all I'm getting is grief. Falsely accused, with no basis, thrown in prison for years, then hoping to get out, and then somebody doesn't remember to tell my story, and it's like hopeless. But now I see. And you can see this in your life. Maybe not in the, kind of the same timing and extent or else, but look what he's done. He saved you. Wow. That's much greater than being number two in the world. Much greater. Look what you have given, been given. Are you thankful? Where do you look at yourself in that? You know, so as we look at Paul's writings and so forth, you know, I could never, when I was earlier years of my walk, I could never understand why Paul could ever say he was the chief of all sinners. I thought he was pretty good. Man, he writes all these books and charges all these churches. And how in the world could he think he's the chief of all sinners? What did he do that I don't know about? And now I have to say, move over, Paul. There's a new chief of all sinners in the world. Because the closer we get to him, the more we see our wretchedness, right? Without him. Because he is so pure and holy, and I'm not. He's changing this heart, but it's still desperately and deceitfully wicked. It won't be for long. For long, we'll soon have glorification. So all I can say is the goodness of God. The goodness of God. So let's just sing this song. The goodness of God.
I love you, Lord. Oh, your mercy never fails me. And all my days I've been held in your hand. From the moment that I wake up until I lay my head, oh, I will sing of the goodness of God. 'Cause all my life you have been faithful, and all my life you have been so, so good. With every breath that I am able, oh, I will sing of the goodness of God. I love your voice. You will lead me through the fire, and in darkest night you will close like no other. I've known you as a father. I've known you as a friend, and I have lived in the goodness of God. And all my life the goodness of God.
Father, how we thank you for your goodness. We praise you. We worship you. Help us to be a light in the darkness today, Lord, giving you all the glory. In Jesus' name, amen.